Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Greetings, this is the automatically deleted husband, still trying to reconcile with my family. I am obviously hoping to enjoy a dialogue with my kids. It would be wonderful to have a dialogue with my wife. And yes, Dorothy Jane is my wife, because, you know, I've read things like, the Bible, things like, Romans 7, 1 Corinthians 7, 1 Corinthians 6, Mark 10, Matthew 5 and 19 and whatnot. And I don't try to twist it to my own aim as, I can think of some names. I spent all day trying to produce a 14-minute video. It's been ridiculous. I did some more tweaks to the script. And I did record it audio only. And that was some effort. And one of the advantages of doing audio only is that it's much easier to edit. But I did it so I didn't have to do the talking head thing. Except I did do for the last two paragraphs gave you the talking head. But what I did is I used a whole bunch of clip art stuff I generated, you know, in order to show text and whatnot, to show logos, like, you know, show for leaks, because obviously this is one of the focuses. But then a whole bunch of photos. Some of it was simply stock photos, because there's a lot of places you can get free photos. And some of it was slaves. And that's so easy to find. It's so remarkable. So when I show pictures of slaves, I'm not showing pictures of actors or clip art that is representing slaves. I'm showing slaves. And to get a 14-minute video done, I spent hours and hours and hours, and I still have about one more minute of the video to do. I wanted to have it done, published today. It looks like it'll be tomorrow. So that is my hope. It is heart-wrenching. I talked with Chris today. He has read the script. And again said, one of the differences is, you know, I keep trying to find somebody else to be the face of this. And he says the issue is you're the one with a passion for it. You know, I haven't had the direct interaction with a slave in a foreign land. I have had interactions, you know, the easy one, because they're easy to find, the drug dealers and the drug users. But also know people who to eat offered their bodies. And anyway. I really, as I've been trying to think this through, and look at the way the Lord molded me. Because I see the Lord's molding in me, even like I say, I can point to where I think he gave a serious hint to me, saying, remember this moment. I'm going to give you a clue this way. And one day, really open your eyes to it. You know, for example, as a young kid watching the Charlie Brown Christmas, you know, I thought, okay, that means something. I didn't know 10% or less, 1% of what it meant. But there was something somehow I think the Lord was telling me, remember this. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And I know that from Linus. I remember being at a movie theater, you know, when you used to do those kind of things, as a young kid, seeing the movie Ben-Hur. And, because it came out in like 59, I think. And then, you know, back then, periodically, the big name movies, like Ben-Hur was a big one, would show up back at the theaters. And so somewhere in the perhaps mid-60s, I went and saw it. And I remember the scene of Ben-Hur when he was captured, enslaved, and he was in a line of people going through the desert, chained together, and they stopped at this place in order to give people water. And, you know, one of the things I really appreciate is the one actor who played the centurion. And the way he said, no water for him. You know, and again, this caught my eye. I didn't know why. But I tell you why now. When Ben-Hur collapses, kind of exhausted, needing water to drink, and then being denied, he collapses down to his knees and says, God, help me. I didn't understand that as a kid, but I knew there was something significant about this scene. Because who came to help him? A nice fellow? No. God himself, Jesus Christ, and brought a water to him, gave him the water to drink, and even dripped some water, put it on his head, and so forth. It was showing intimacy. Centurion, I mean, he had hardly a role in this movie, but it was superb what he did. You, I said, no water for him. And then the look, then Jesus stands up and looks at him. And the look in the centurion's face was fantastic. Because here's a man who had authority. But he knew, you could see, he knew he did not have authority over this man. And I really think that was beautiful. That was really, really beautiful. And of course, today I can explain all the details. And I really think, you know, when I look at that particular movie and so many of the scenes and so many of those subtle words, the people involved were writing that were followers of Christ, because it was deep, really, really deep. It wasn't this fluff, oh, let's be nice stuff. This was really, so many of the things were just fantastic. Anyway, you know, Ben-Hur, A Story of the Christ. Marvelous. It is my favorite movie, by far. But anyway, my videos are not as good. 14-minute video, and I spent hours and hours and hours on it. You know, the recording of the audio. I think it took about, I could check, but it's probably about a half hour of recording, because I would record something and then I would redo, because I would, do a paragraph at a time, and then kind of like, and then sometimes redo things. So there was probably an hour there. Then I had to go and edit the audio. And so I just said, okay, the audio is done, because that's easy. And then I added the photos to it, and, you know, how to get the photos and whatnot, or for a lot of them, because I, you know, the clip art stuff, you know, and I used some clip art of women being beaten. And, you know, I talk about fighting back. And there they got that one woman fighting back. And I really, I really, it is my hope and prayer. Well, okay, the point I was trying to make is when I look back at my life, there's the stuff early in life, but then there's the stuff when Christ said, okay, now open your eyes, which, you know, was 1980s, late 80s. And the focus initially was to be active in pro-life ministry. And I took it very, very seriously. That quickly added, because of the relationships I had at the Pregnancy Care Center, to the black and white issue. And that was secondary, but it was very present. And of course, many things happened subsequent to that. And the third thing, and I can't really point to where, but the slavery thing came in. And, you know, you can see that, for example, in the videos I did in 2020. They're, you know, obviously done. Anyway. But it is my hope. You know, I've wanted to write an article, and I never did. I have the title, Abortion is Murder, Don't Outlaw It. And, you know, that's, and I was going to back it up with scripture and whatnot, but I just never got around to it. There's too many things. But, you know, that'll get me in trouble. But I, you know, again, when I shifted from what Psalm 139 to Genesis 1, I would have gotten in trouble with the pro-life community in the first place, or a lot of them. But, well, my hope is that doing this will get to somebody that says, I want to see this happen. Because as I describe at the end, I will contend, you know, because Shofar Nexus has been in development for over 20 years. It's been a lot of refinement, huge amount of change. Not a single bit of the original design exists anymore. But the objective, the rough objective, has been consistent. The idea of to be able to proclaim. The various nuances have been added about the security. You know, again, Shofar Leak started in 2011, shortly before my wife abandoned me. And, the Matryoshka Protocol started in 2011, and Shofar Leak started in 2012, after my wife abandoned me. I think that's right. Anyway, it's about that timing. But part of it is, again, my personal thing. And, you know, because I want my kids to know, I want my kids to know this. You know, I say over and over again, I am a repeat offender when it comes to a whistleblower. But one of the other things that I am is someone who made a whole bunch of dumb mistakes in the process, before, during, and after, especially after particular events. Really, really dumb mistakes. In seeing that in myself, it allows me to see it in others. And obviously, it's easy to see in the high-profile cases, you know, the Daniel Hale, or, you know, the people around WikiLeaks, you know. You can see a lot of people made some dumb mistakes. But the really, the big thing is, again, because it's the person down the street. The people who make the major news get an entourage around them. People down the street don't. So how do I help encourage and bless the person down the street? And it's not just simply give them a way to be a whistleblower and be protected. That's step one, yes. But there's also the importance of, and I don't know how to do this, protecting the whistleblower, yeah, that's actually, I think it's clear. It's easy. But how do you encourage, well, one, grace to the whistleblower, because again, they make a bunch of dumb mistakes. And then reconciliation between the various parties involved, whatever the situation is. Doing the protection of the whistleblower, it's easy. It's technology. It's easy. Informing the whistleblower how to use it so they don't make mistakes. Well, that's why I would hope somebody who can explain it better than I can would come to the table. But then finding a way for the whistleblower and the perpetrators or whatever it is to reconcile. I would suggest, obviously, in the vast majority of cases, I don't think there's a chance that'll happen. So for most cases, it's protect the whistleblower. But for some, how do you encourage, how do you facilitate reconciliation? What did my Creator step into His creation to do? Just to be a nice fellow and say, everybody be nice. To live a sinless life. To be an atonement for my sin. To reconcile the relationship between Him and His elect. That's the model I see set before me. How do I do that myself and help facilitate somebody else? I don't know. The protection part, I do know. And the sex slave thing, you know, obviously I'm very much addressing Coco, you know. But anyway, but the sex slave is, because the cocoa slavery and whatnot, I mentioned things like mining and whatnot. Show some pictures. So easy to get pictures. Pictures of people, the slaves on boats and whatnot. It was easy to find those pictures. But the sex slave is not just over there. It's down the street. And, you know, there are other things. The domestic servitude is very much here in the U.S., in slavery. But that's usually not as dirty, shall we say. The sex slave. Definitely dirty. So they're the focus. Because, again, I don't know if I said it out right, but I definitely suggested it. It's often the local people in authority, political, business, whatever, who are corrupt, and you can't turn to them for help because they may be the perpetrator. In a smaller context, that's, I think, very likely to happen. But, you know, one of the points I make, because I used I used the obvious of recent things. There are a whole bunch of others, but the recent one is the Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell and Pedophile Island. So they're all mentioned directly. And I dropped in a clip. You know, most of the time I use just still images, do a little movement and whatnot. But here I dropped in, a couple of times I did this, I dropped in a video clip. What I did is I dropped in the video and did not use the audio. But it's the video from Lou Radowski of We Are Change. Because he and Berwick, I think is the name, goes by Dollar Vigilante. the two of them, because he has a lot of money, so and they're friends. So the two of them went, got on a boat, you know, hired a boat, went to the island, and the apparently they said that the guy who was on the boat says, no, I'm not going near that, and then apparently changed his mind, dropped them off, And I think they're the only ones that I know of that actually got to the island. There was a reporter from RT who got to appear, saw someone, had an interaction, and had to leave. These two gentlemen, Lewandowski and Berwick, got on the island and went all over the place and videoed it, so forth, pictures and whatnot. And so they did a 10-minute video, and then they got caught, and they left quickly. you know, and so you see a whole lot of stuff from that island. And, you know, one of the things is some of the artwork there reminds me of the artwork my son Jack does. I've mentioned that before. But I put that in. I put in the bulk of the trailer for The Dark Side of Chocolate. And you see some of the words that were said, because there was subtitles for that. And I put them in. And it's... this is probably one of the most provocative videos I've done. And Lord willing, it'll be online tomorrow, obviously on Kozlowski.org, on ShofarLeaks.com, on ShofarNexus.com, on YouTube, Brighteon, and BitChute. And my guess is the traffic will come from BitChute. But then I will email friends and ask them to inform others. And then I'll try to email as many organizations and others I can and say, here it is. Do you want to interact on this? And I think what I'm going to do, if I can figure out, get addresses and whatnot, but oh, the time involved. Because I'm not doing software. Go to people who have podcasts or things of that nature and say, hey, look at this. You want to talk about it? I don't want to do that kind of stuff. But I guess I have to, if the door's open for it. The reason I'm in trouble... the reason I got in trouble with so many places is because we claim to follow Christ. And as a young guy, I followed Christ as the crowd followed Christ. That's all I knew. We're called to mature. And I'm about to turn 67. I'm not a young guy anymore. If I were to do the same things I did when I was in my 30s, I would be a fool. And the issue is, it's no longer a question of, well, are you kind of weak at this, or do you not understand? No, it's clear. And it is unambiguous, since I know if I don't do it, that would demonstrate I'm a coward. It would demonstrate that my obedience to Christ is not there, and that my claim to be a follower of Christ is a fraud. I have no option but to pursue this, and if I stumble along the way, I will stumble along the way. I am grateful for the encouragement I've gotten from Chris. I so very much want, you know, and was encouraged today because I said, I want to have somebody who will interact with me, who will be the face of this. And I have a working name. You know, I have the two working names. Abdullah, the guy who's a Muslim, that via the Shofar Book Project, either while I'm alive or after I'm dead, will be a devout Muslim, see the Lord will open his eyes because he'll be able to get to a Bible safely and see, ah, it's not the prophet Jesus, but the Lord Jesus Christ, my Lord. His name is Abdullah. Maybe. But I'm assuming he exists and the Lord knows who he actually is. And then there's Charles. The person that I really do want to meet and interact with. You know, today I wasn't going to be, I don't know if I was going to make 3 minutes. I give 5 points, yes. Someone to promote the idea, funding, people in the ecosystem, a technical review, and a mentor relationship. The way I describe the mentor relationship in the audio. Fifth is one or more young adept technical people to come up to speed on the project to one day make it their own. Be clear on this. It is an offer for hell on earth. You have to know why you want this and have a backbone. Because, you know, I've been thinking that through for years in seeking Charles to be the face. But you know, it's one thing to say, oh, here it is. Go run with it. I want to do the mentor thing. I want to interact with somebody and not say, well, do it this way. But this is the way I did it. Tell me why I'm wrong. Let's improve it together. Bring what your thoughts are to the table and let me tell you why you're wrong. In the process, you or I, here is indeed an improvement, something to add, something to take away. And I can do it, he can do it, whatever. But do it, have that mutual challenge to each other. So one day, Shofar Nexus is mine. I intend to go to the grave with that being mine and mine alone. It's like Charles Schultz, who said, peanuts after I'm gone, nobody takes it over. Shofar Nexus, after I'm gone, nobody takes over the name. Somebody takes over the project with a different name. Shofar Boogaloo, whatever. Probably you'd probably want to keep the shofar in the front just because that name is used. I mean, all the data structures use shofar. So, and of course, it gives the relationship, and you can go there and say, the Shofar Nexus project has ceased development, and this is the next version of it. You know, somebody else may do the same, but, you know, I'm the guy who was mentored by the guy who developed Shofar Nexus. And I want to put it into a man's hand who has the backbone to do it. Because it's going to cost him. It's going to cost him dearly. Anyway. So much for a 3-minute video. My lady, my wife. There's a video that, Lord willing, I mean, I just actually rendered it and watched it, and it's kind of like, oh! Called Modern Day Slavery, From Cocoa to Sex. Offering a fighting chance for some. Lord willing, tomorrow, that'll be published. Lord willing, there'll be a couple hundred views, at least within the week. There's the possibility, if it makes a connection with somebody, it won't be a couple hundred views. It would be nice if this becomes suddenly my most popular video. If I get a connection to somebody, especially somebody with a podcast, it'll get some traffic. You know, I may do that. I've pondered it because Shofar Leaks has a Twitter account. Hasn't been used in 10 years, 8 years, whatever it is. I might do that. And they go, find the provocative places and tell people. I don't want to do that. I hate that. I really hate that. I want to find Charles to do that. And again, one last thing. Again, the last line. What if that is your daughter? Chris said, yes, what if that is Neely? We talked, you know, because we said, you know, because it's so easy to hear about, you know, again, from the numbers I see, and I've seen this, I think, several places. They may use the same source of the information, so I'm not sure. But the idea that there's comfortably over a million, you know, I think it's like 1.2 or 1.5 million, whatever it is. But so I say over a million people are kidnapped every year. So that's over one a minute, Amber Tisdale. So you think about that. Every minute, somewhere in the world, someone's been kidnapped. And a lot of that is sex-oriented. Some of it is kind of a long-term relationship. And some of it, they're used and they die. And when I was in Florida in the early 80s, I went to Broward Mall in Fort Lauderdale. I went there, you know, because that was the, you know, at the time, malls were far more of a big thing, and that was the nice mall in the area. There was a second one closer to me, but it wasn't as nice. Broward, that was the nice one. And while I was there, a family went there, and somehow their son got separated from them. They never saw him alive again. I think it took over a year till they finally found his body. You know, so he was indeed abducted and misused. So it's one of the things that did to me at the time, it gave me a connection. Because both, I think before and after the time it happened, I'd been in that mall. So it was not over there. It was a place I've been to. It's just like, you know, the So You Think You Will Dance video that I've linked to, that I have. It's on Kozlowski.org. The thing that ties me to that all the more, because I've been there or been to a place like that, I'm not sure. When I look at that video, but, you know, because I'm thinking back to the 1970s, so it's kind of like, well, you know, I could be fudging it. I really think I've actually been right there. You know, it's kind of like, and, you know, the 3-minute video, great. See, one of the things that sunk into me, my relative, Ian Hamburg, we went, had dinner somewhere, and then he took me, showed me around, said, yeah, here, let me show you some of these places in case you want to make use of the services. And it's kind of like, no, I don't live this kind of lifestyle. Not at all. He was a little more flexible than I was. But, you know, the red light district in Hamburg, which is a big one, you know, the Reeperbahn. And I remember we walked by a place, one of these places with the windows and like 4 or 5 windows, that there was a girl sitting there at a chair, window was open. And he said to me, Jürgen said to me, hey, go look at that one. So I turned around, as he suggested, I looked at this woman, the window, you know, because the window can open so you can directly communicate. And she had a glass of something with ice in it. She threw it out and tossed it at me. It missed, but it was obviously, I think she knew that, one, I wasn't a customer, and she probably sees a lot of gawkers. And that's what she probably took me for and wanted to insult me. But the reality is, because at that time I did not have a relationship with Christ, but I think it's another clue. Christ had a relationship with me. He protected me from that stuff. because it was handed to me on a silver platter. And in the grace of God, I said no. Not because of my willpower, but in the grace of God, I said no. Am I loved by the Lord? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So what do I need to do? Love Him. And love my neighbor as myself. Including when my neighbor is a little black kid with his machete harvesting cocoa pods thousands of miles away from me. That child is my neighbor. And the girl down the street who has been horribly mistreated, a light term, that's my neighbor. I need to love them both. I hope and pray that the effort I put in yesterday, today, and it looks like tomorrow will be an act of love. You know, and the whole point, you know, what was the comment in there? Oh, the last line. Second, the last paragraph. This may only help a few, or maybe only one. Chris's comment. He said in our dialogue, it could happen to Neely, his granddaughter, one of his granddaughters. He has three. I only have two. Oh, I have only one granddaughter, two grandsons that I know of. It can hit home. I think of, because I watched an interview with a group of guys, and I need to maybe find that again. These are the guys that are unlike me. They got muscles all over the place. You don't mess with them. Like Oleg Melnikov. You don't mess with them. And they go to places. I think it was like Jamaica or Haiti or places like that. And they go find these girls. And they free them. And occasionally do some wall-to-wall counseling. And I think also, if I recall correctly, they're heavily armed. I respect men like that. I really respect men like that. And I'm the digital version. My lady, my wife, the woman I love and adore. Remember, married a pro-life activist. He married a man who spent time engaging the black community and looking at them as human beings created in the image of God. And it's my hope and prayer. One day, maybe I got to get a third name now. Abdullah, the Muslim, will know Christ because the Lord will use the work I've done. The Lord calls him, doesn't need me, but he'll use the work I've done, or will do. And some lady, somewhere, will be protected from, or freed from, a horrible situation. You know, I think about the activity I've had. You know, one of the greatest things, I was at a meeting. I think it was a board meeting. Could have been somewhere else. I think it was a board meeting because one of the people, because occasionally, you know, a lot of us, including myself, would go to a church on a Sunday morning or whatnot and make a presentation at the worship service. And woman said, yes, I went to whatever church it was, told something about this pregnancy care center and whatnot. Then a woman violated protocol at the church after she was done. Instead of letting the pastor come to the pulpit, she got up and took the pulpit. And said, "My child is downstairs in a nursery. It's an adopted child from a child that was scheduled to be aborted, whose the mom, birth mom, changed their mind because of the pregnancy care center. And it happened while I was involved, this event with this woman." Because this was years after. I mean, I've been involved for many years by that time. To hear that made it worth it. Made it worth it. One other. As I matured, and I think it was either during my transition or post the transition from Psalm 139 to Genesis 1, I had an interaction with a pastor that I knew. Talked to him about Genesis 1, and we engaged each other a bit. So many months later, he said, "You convinced me. I examined the scripture and you were right. And we're pregnant." That's why I do it. My lady, my wife, I love you and I want you back.